And then, Alexei, now when your conscious mind is not eavesdropping unhealthily, I want you to just lift your yes finger up. And I'll get like this, and I'll say, okay, now, I want you to tell me if you know exactly how to give them this choice that they want. And I'll go, now, you have to find the right circuits to be able to speak only one word at a time. And they always can talk then. Now, I don't know what this one word at a time thing is all about. Because typically I don't say more than one at a time unless I put one inside another one, which is something you can do. Part of the whole thing about ambiguities in language is learning to be able to deliver simultaneous messages. I think doctors have to learn to say what the law requires them to say and at the same time say it doesn't mean anything. You know, I mean, I know that when I want people in an audience to understand that I'm telling them an idea that I think is stupid, I know a certain gesture that works really well. Right? I go, yes, and we'll never be able to do this, right? Yeah, sure. To me, that it's all too often that people have heard things so many times they start to believe them. They believe that life is not going to be filled with joy, but they're not told that the first thing you have to do is to wake up and start thinking about how you're going to make yourself feel good. They told me years ago, when I used to get clients, I said, who are the most difficult clients of all? And I had a group of psychiatrists and social workers and people in an audience, and one person said, compulsives. And everybody in the audience went, yeah, man. And I said, what's a compulsive? Tell me. And they said, and I wouldn't leave it alone. You know how I am. So I had them all send me compulsives. So for a month, I had nothing but compulsives. I said, send me your worst. And boy, did they. These people were just, and because when I found out what compulsives were, I was so disappointed. They're so easy. Because all you do is you give them long lists of things they have to do from minute to minute every day. I made up a thing that I use that literally never goes more than 5 minutes without a new instruction. And I give them a clock. Typically, they all have plenty already. But mine, and I like to give them the clock, attach it to the suggestions. And I said, now you have to do this, because the first thing they have to do when they wake up is to think of three things that make them very happy, each for 30 seconds apiece. Right? Then they have to write it down in their journal neatly. And then it goes on like that throughout the entire fucking day. Right. Typically, when they read through it, because it's, I think, about 26 pages long, right? They look through this thing. Normally, if you gave this to a human being, they would look at it and go, I don't know when I'm going to have time to do this, but they usually go through it like this, and they go, is this it? That's when you know you have a true compulsive. Now, to me, I've discovered that not just compulsives are compulsive. They're great, because if you give them enough instructions, and then when they come back in 2 weeks, you say, now I want you to double the amount of time you're doing each of these things. They always think I'm going to reduce it. Not me. They want to keep busy, I'll keep them busy. But to some degree, everybody is a compulsive. There are some people who are compulsive worriers. There are some people that are always compulsively looking for what's going to go wrong. The most important thing is to realize there's any habit or behavior that's there. There's two things you can do. You can build them and you can break them. Because in physics, in the universe, in all of chemistry, all of science, in fact, pretty much everything, it all boils down to two things. You can put things together and you can take things apart. And that's all there is. Now, once you think of it this simply, that when people come in and start to talk to you, you only have to figure out what you have to put together and what you have to break apart. And the best way to break something is to overdo it. And this is one of the things I want you to become a master at. When people talk to themselves in their head and they say that I have a lot of voices, and you try to get them to turn them down, they never can they? Don't. Instead, add more. That's what I like to do. I like to have them turn the volume up really loud. And there are people who make pictures. For example, there's this country called Germany. When you want to talk about compulsives, right, I had to make up a new compulsive gear just for them. See, they make big still pictures and obey them. And so I told them, well, the pictures aren't big enough. I made the pictures 300 feet high and fall over on them. But there's a thing. When you bend sheet metal like this, it goes back. But when you go, it stays there. It's called catastrophe theory. It's the name of how things become permanent and won't reverse back to where they are. It's just a set of mathematics. Most of the techniques that I use are made out of these mathematics because I want to make it. See, because math is not about the outside world. Math is about our neurology. It doesn't work in the outside world. It works in our head. If you can build a bridge that doesn't fall down, it doesn't fall down for humans. The wind doesn't blow it over, but it's only us that knows that it's there. It's only us that needs a bridge. It's only us that uses the bridge. And when we have to conceive of what it takes to build something that will last, we have to be us that conceives it. Math is a behavioral science, that if I lay out equations, they only work for the people that understand them. That literally, if I write out a sentence of arithmetic, 97 equals 3, 97 plus 3 equals 100, that's a sentence of arithmetic. In and of itself, it doesn't tell you anything else. But I can write the same sentence in a different way. I can go 1 cubed plus 2, or 1 squared plus 2 squared plus 3 squared equals 6 cubed. I mean, the thing is that these kinds of things work. And 1 plus 2 plus 3 equals 6, and you have a 6 over here. Then you can begin to ask the question, well, if you add a 4, is it 10? The answer is yes. If all of these are cubed and this is a square, 10 squared equals 100. 1, 2, 3, 4, all squared also equals 100. So 100 equals 100 suddenly becomes something where you can say, well, if I add a 5, is this 15? If I add a 6, is this 21? And it goes on infinitely. To be able to ask new questions, the only difference is that you first take things and make them all the same size, and then you make them in order. When you want to be able to make it so that change goes into the future, and so that people can begin to do new things. What the hell is making that noise? Well, open the door and tell them if they don't stop, there's going to be a fire in the kitchen. A big fire. There's going to be a flaming human. Fire! You know what you could do? You could just call downstairs and say, I'm sorry, we have a small case of asshole denoisius. Or else we could all chant, kill the cook, kill the cook. He'll take care of it. It's right, sit down. We'll just will it to be so. Now, if you think of things that you compulsively do, like, see, some people are, thank you very much, you have succeeded. I always like the trainers that I have. My trainers no longer wait for anything. Right, they find a way. One door doesn't work, they go for another. That's right. After you do enough stuff around me, you just won't accept failure. It irritates you. I walk into clock stores, and I'll find one that doesn't work and fix it. That's not too compulsive, is it? Do you think? Really, really, really? Sometimes when I'm bored, you know, I just find a place to go to. And I was in some little town in Maine doing a thing for a trucking company. We were doing training. And when I got there, they only wanted me to work for an hour every day for 5 days. They were paying me a fortune. They said, well, that's all the time we can spare the management. Right? So for an hour a day, I talked to these people, and I was done. And here I am in the middle of fucking nowhere. Right? You know, this. I guess in Maine they don't consider it the middle of fucking nowhere, but I sure do. I mean, you know, at night I could watch the fireflies, but the rest of the time all I could do is sit in my hotel room and try and not die of the smell of chlorine. They had an indoor pool. It's nothing like chlorine inside going directly into your room. And so I said, maybe I should go outside. So I went outside, and I was walking down the street, and I saw a sign that said sanitarium. And I said, I haven't heard about a sanitarium in years. Do they still have those? And I went up, and there was a big gate, and there was a guard in front of the gate. And I walked up and I said, "This place is still open." And he said, "Well, of course." And I said, "What is it?" And he said, "Well, it's a 90-bed psychiatric hospital." And I said, "That sounds like it would do." I said, "Open the gate." And he did. And I walked in. I said, "Who's in charge?" He told me the name, so I walked up and opened the door, and I went in, and there was a nurse receptionist, and she looked like that woman from One Flew Out of the Cuckoo's Nest. She looked as cranky as a human being could look, so I lowered myself and crawled in front of the window and went up and went around the corner, opened the door to her little booth and snuck up behind her, stood behind her, and I went, "Nurse!" And she went, "Ah!" And I anchored it. And I said, "Ma'am?" I said, "You will tell me where the man in charge of this hospital is." And she went, "Dr. Bernstein?" And I said, "Yes." And she said, "Well, he's in his office." I said, "Is that very far?" She said, "Well, it's all the way across on the other side of the hospital." I said, "Good, call him and tell him to get over here then." And so she picked up this big old-fashioned microphone. It's really cool. It was a big stand on it and a great big head. She went, "Kuh!" And the whole place went, "Kuh!" She went, "Dr. Bernstein, I want you to get to the front door, PDQ. Boom, and set it down. And I said, "This goes, when you talk to him, it goes to every room in the hospital?" And she went, "Yes, of course." I said, "You look like you could use a coffee break." I said, "Here's a quarter. Go get some coffee." I sat there and did a 2.5-hour hypnotic induction. Dr. Bernstein never made it to the front. It wasn't until finally somebody came walking down the hallway. Right? And it was this nice lady, and she walked up and she said, "The people back in our ward want to know if you'd come back there." And I said, "I don't see a reason for that." And she said, "Well," she said, "there are some people that really haven't spoken to anybody, and they're asking for you." And I said, "What?" And she said, "Well," she said, "there's this one guy, he's locked in this room, and he hasn't spoken to anybody for years, but he's been real violent and stuff, and they had him strapped down. He got out of the straps somehow." And I stopped and I thought, "Wonder how he did that?" And then I started remembering I told them these stories about Houdini. And I thought, "Cool." I said, "If he can get out of the straps, how come he can't unlock the door?" So I went back there with her, and there was a guy, and he was knocking on the door and like that and jabbering away. And I said, and he didn't talk. I said, "Cool." I said, "Who's got the keys?" She pointed over, and there was this guy in a white suit sleeping, kind of. So I took the keys off, and I opened the door, and I said, "Come on out." And the guy came out, and he said, "Where am I?" And I said, "Well, you're in a mental hospital, kind of." And he said, "How did I get here?" And I said, "Well, I don't know how you got here." And he said, "How long have I been here?" And the lady said she'd been there 3 years, and he'd been there all that time. Had no memory of how he got there at all. And so I thought, well, we better find somebody and find out about this. And I said, "Does anybody know what Dr. Bernstein looks like?" And this lady said, "I do." And I said, "You should be running this place, you know." So we went out and looked around. We found him. He wasn't really that far away. He was sitting in this little cafeteria place, face down on the table, like this. So I lifted up his hand, and I said, "I'm going to tell you to put it down." Only as fast as it turned out, he was one of Milton's students. I gave a lecture one time to the group of people who were all students of Milton's, members of his Society of Clinical Hypnosis. Every one of them, 60 years or older, they'd all worked with Milton. And when I wrote Patterns, they hired me to come out and give a speech. And they'd never met me, so they didn't know what I looked like. They didn't know what I sounded like. So I thought, boy, I can have some fun here. So what I did is I put on a purple T-shirt, purple pants, and purple shoes. And I dyed my hair purple. I got purple contacts. And when I arrived at the place, there was somebody there, and I walked up and I said, I'm here for the lecture. And they said, I'm sorry, tonight it's only open to members. And I said, I'm here to give the lecture. And the guy said, you're Richard Bandler? And I said, that's right. Now, please escort me to where I need to go. And he brought me in and he walked me up this long thing, right? And we got up and we got in front of the podium and the guy turned around and he looked at me and he looked out at this audience who was all like this. And he said, well, he said, we have Dr. Bandler here who's going to tell us about his new book about Milton. And when he said it, everybody's pupils went, And I went, ooh. I was drooling like a hypnosis shark. So I looked out and I said, now, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I'd like to tell you about Milton H. Erickson, M.D. of Phoenix, Arizona. The front two rows were already gone. They'd listened to Milton for so long, they just went, poof. Within 5 minutes, the entire audience was completely unconscious. I even stopped talking. I said, that's right, and you know exactly what I'm going to say. And I went and sat down. Waited about 15, 20 minutes and walked back up and I said, so that concludes my lecture today. And they applauded wildly. People came up and they said, you know, we enjoyed your lecture so much. And I went, invariably, that having learned to speak like Milton, I discovered usually in a room I could tell who'd met him. All I'd have to do is go, now, you can learn about going into a trance deeply. And you'd watch somebody in the room and go, and I'd walk over and go, like this, and I go, so you met Milton? And they go, oh, yeah. And I go, did you enjoy it? And they'd go, I even took the two films I had of Milton, put them on big TVs in my waiting room, and turned them both on. So that they would just run simultaneously. So when people would come in, they'd sit down, they'd look up, and Milton would be going, because they're just straight up pictures. All you see is his face, and he's talking in one to a guy named Nick, and the other in the film, talking to Mondi. And they'd go like this, and they'd look at this one, they'd look at that one, they'd go. And he'd be over here, and he'd go, Mondi, now is you go into a trance deeply, now. People would look over here, and he'd go, Nick, I'm going to count from 20 to 1. With each count, you'll go deeper, 20, 19. And this one'd be going, and this one'd be going. And pretty soon, I'd just watch the little monitor on my desk, and then I'd tell my secretary, okay, you can get them now. And they'd bring the people in, and she'd lead them in like this, sit them in the chair. And I had 5 or 6 offices, and I'd just run from office to office and do things with people. And I'd just grab the chart off the door and go in and sit down. And you have to be careful, because I sat down and I just started rattling away. There was a woman who had somebody referred to me. They wanted me to do some pain control with her and see if I could do something, because she had an ovarian cyst. And they were going to operate, and they'd heard that I'd helped people to dissolve them. I didn't know you weren't supposed to be able to do that, so I did it accidentally. But then I started getting all these referrals, and so I was going along, and I was going, now, Susan, as you let that ovarian cyst begin to dissolve inside you. And then all of a sudden, I looked out of the corner of my eye, and I thought, that's the ugliest looking woman I've ever seen in my life. Look at the beard on her. And I kind of looked around the front. She had no breasts. And I thought, well, they were flat-chested women. And I looked down and I said, but usually not with a penis. And I looked at the chart and I said, So I opened the door and I called my secretary over and I pointed and she went, oops. And I switched the chart. So I went back and I sat down and I looked at it. And to this day, whenever you say Susan around Randy, he responds unusually. See, it's the sensory acuity that tells you what to do. Now, I know that the 3 days that we've been here, a lot of you have come up and said, are you going to do anything with this or anything with this? And there's lots of different things that I do. But when you do an intro, the most important thing to me is that you understand how much it is that you already know. Now, I know that your conscious mind has learned a lot about some things. But there's a whole lot of other things that I've been doing that over the days and weeks ahead, I think you're going to find yourself acting differently. So I would appreciate it for a minute if you just put your feet flat on the floor, take a deep breath, and just sit back for a spell. That what I want you to do is just go inside and relax. That's right, just close your eyes, take a deep breath, and go inside and realize that what you've been doing here has nothing to do with anything but learning. And you've learned very well. Now, years ago, when you first went to school and you looked above the blackboard and you saw letters of the alphabet, big A, little A, big B, little B, you had no idea that it would be connected to an infinite amount of possibilities of things that you could read. You didn't know that each of those letters would become the foundation so that you could read and write about an unlimited number of subjects in an unlimited number of situations. But yet that foundation, no matter how fast or how slow you read, is still something that became the foundation for not just learning about itself, but for learning about other things. You can learn how to fix your car. You can learn everything. In fact, they think we're so stupid, they give us instructions with a hairdryer. It even says, do not use this in the shower. You know how many people are in a hurry and want to get their hair wet and dry at the same time. But even though I think we're smarter than the rest of the world thinks we are, and I'm usually right, I know that that foundation became the foundation for you to do all kinds of things. Well, we've been doing the same thing here that you were doing way back then. So I'd like you to take a moment and go back in your mind. Go back in time. 1 year, 2 years, 3 years, however many years are appropriate for everyone but this kid up here. He don't need to go back. He's still there. I want you to go back to when you still looked at the world as being wonderful. Everything was new, new things, that when you got a present, what was inside the box was as cool as the present. That when you began to look at new opportunities and going to new places, when you could chase a bird with abandonment, when the world was a place filled with wonder. See, nowadays I see people walk in, they click the electric light, the light comes on, and they're not blown out of the water. They don't look at that as a miracle. They don't look at the fact that we can communicate at all as a miraculous thing. They don't look at people and see the life inside them. They go, get out of my way, I'm in a hurry. They don't realize the fact that we fly and we drive, that you go in a supermarket and all that stuff. You don't have to grow your own food. You don't have to kill your own deer. Everything is there. Food from all over the planet. Gosh, I can get in Ireland in the dead of winter, oranges from across the world, shellfish from out of the ocean in Seattle. I can have in New York. They fly it there every day. You can drink wines from the past. You can read things that have been written by people who have been dead for hundreds and hundreds of years. They even translate it from foreign language. That to be alive now is a lot better than it has been on a lot of times in this planet. And most people just look and they go, but the air is polluted. All these things can be fixed if we become ferocious and creative. Wherever there has been problems for human beings, they have eventually overcome them. We even came out of the Dark Ages and kicked religion in the ass and told it wouldn't run our lives and it wouldn't kill our children. And we wouldn't take anyone who was a healer and burn them at the stake. We managed in this country, women got the right to vote without it. That's a really amazing accomplishment, and it just shows who's been running men all along. To me, this is all good. I've seen in my lifetime, it used to be that when you were in a motel, they wouldn't take reservations because when they passed the Equal Rights Amendment for black people, they were afraid blacks would make reservations and disguise their voice. I remember being in a hotel lobby when I was a kid and having somebody talk about what a problem that was. And wondering what they meant by a black person. They called them niggers then. I didn't know it was like my friends, because I lived in a neighborhood where the exception was me. I didn't live in a nice neighborhood, but I'll tell you the way they described these people, I would have never known they were the people that I lived with. I wondered, and after that, I even asked one of my friends, do you know what a nigger is? And he said, well, that's what certain people call us. And I went, you and me? And he went, no, not you. And I went, why not me? Why you? And they said, because of the color of my skin. And I looked at my skin and I thought, what's wrong with my skin? But you see, as time has gone along, I get on an airplane. They don't make blacks sit somewhere. They don't do that. And everywhere I go, every year it gets better and better. I love it because of the black Muslims became my guards in New York when I was there. They took care of me. They were worried that I'd be mistreated. And I want to tell you, boy, you know, at one time their philosophy was have nothing to do with white people. Then they started getting selective and realizing, well, we're going to need to talk to some of them. And then they discovered that if you're going to treat us badly, we're going to give you so much shit that you'll never think about it again. See, to me, difference is what it's all about and learning to appreciate it. To me, I'm always looking for what works in people. And I don't care what they look like on the outside as long as they don't look cranky. If they look cranky, then I can do something about it and will. I walk up to total strangers and I pick the best thing about them. And sometimes that's hard to find. It may just be their shoes. And I'll walk up and I'll go, great shoes. And suddenly they'll start to smile and I'll throw a thunderbolt of happiness right out of me and I'll anchor it. And I'll say, do your kids have shoes like that? And fire it off. Because if they're that cranky, I don't want them on my planet. Because it all boils down to the following thing. If the yogurt knows when the yogurt is feeding, then it means that yogurt knows yogurt. And it means that if people begin to vibrate with hate, begin to vibrate with prejudice, they begin to vibrate with ignorance and anger. Well, I know what feeds on fear and hate. And what feeds on fear and hate is evil. And I, unlike most people, believe that evil exists. I believe it more than priests. In fact, there's a certain correlation there for me. That anybody that does not engage in the beauty and the joy of this planet suddenly gets cranky. And I see a lot of crankiness with people who don't have any sex at all. After a while, they begin to get, shall we say, well, I don't know, frustrated. To me, you know, the one thing is whether it has to do with eating. When you eat, you should only eat with people that are in a good mood. If you eat with people you don't like, you're going to be taking that in too. Your own well-being has got to become very important to you. You got to be able, if I sit down in a restaurant and there are assholes next to me, I ask to be moved, and if I can't be moved, then I do things that make them want to leave. Or I go to another restaurant, or else I turn around and I look at them and I begin to let my eye twitch like Clint Eastwood out of his movies, drool out of the corner of my mouth and say, you look like nice people. Can I have your home address? And I stare at them in such a way that suddenly, pretty soon, one of them will say, gee, maybe we should be going now. But I won't put a bit of food in me until the environment around me is pleasant. Typically, I can find some place in the restaurant to be away from them. And on this planet, I know you can find places to be, but if you move through the world and make it so that it is absolutely mandatory for you that the least you're willing to accept is the good feelings that you were willing to put in somebody else today. And the minute you find you're in another state, stop it. Take a deep breath and go, look, for me to do whatever I have to do, and if even it's just pay the phone bill, if you want to get things done on this planet and you want miracles to be there every day, I have a weird thing that I do all the time. I made myself believe there's a parking god. And I found out there must be, because everywhere I go, I believe that utterly there will be a parking place for me. And in San Francisco, where there is no place to park, period, every time I drive out, the people with me go, well, you know, we're not going to be able to find a place to park. And I always pick the restaurants that I want to go to, and it doesn't matter to me, even if there's no place to park there at all. When I get there, the minute I pull up, a car will pull out, and whack, I'll park right in front of the place, and everybody in the car goes, oh, God, it's always like that with you. You're the luckiest person. I'm not lucky. I just am in the right state, because you can't help but affect the universe you live in. If yogurt affects yogurt, then we're going to affect everybody. And it's going to be our state of mind that's so important. Because I found out that it doesn't matter if there's 1,000 people wound up in an unpleasant mood. If I walk in and I'm in a good mood, they'll change their mind. As long as I become impervious, as long as I make it so that I'm callous about this. When I wake up in the morning, I wake up and I go, ooh, just another shitty day in paradise. How much fun am I going to have? How much joy can I feel? What good things are going to happen? Opportunity, money. It's good to be alive. Of course, the morning for me comes a little later than most people, but that's just because I go to bed later. But as I move through the world and make sure that everything, no matter, even if I don't eat much for breakfast, just a glass of juice, I'm going to stop and really drink it and enjoy it. If you make it matter, it will. Whether you're reading a book, talking to your child, or watching a stupid TV program for the 500th time. My kids used to make me go to Disneyland, for God's sake. And where did they want to do the minute we got there? They wanted to go on It's a Small, Small World, the most evil ride of all. You go on that, and for the next month, it's in your head, It's a Small World, nah, nah, nah. And these hideous little demons in there, give me a break. I'd walk out, and my head was, It's a Small World, nah, nah, nah. My kids would look at me and laugh, ha, ha, we want to go on it again, Dad. And I said, I already am. They made me play miniature golf. But I never forgot that when I was there with them, I didn't care about miniature golf. I didn't care about the ball. I used to like try to lose mine as quickly as possible, right? I found out if you use the same stroke in a miniature golf place that you would teeing off on a green, then you can just walk around with them and they don't worry about it. They go, Dad, you know, they said we could play miniature golf here as long as you didn't get a ball. Must be something about that one I knocked that went into the change booth, hit the guy right in the side of the fucking head, knocked him out, and went out the other window. But I didn't do it on purpose. It was just the way he treated children that got to me. I kept seeing a thing. They said, my kid said, knock it in the little building. And I went, I can do this. I thought of it as a karate challenge. If I can cold cock this motherfucker while he's out, I could creep up and say, now, if you're ever to wake up, you will change your attitude towards children. You will speak to them nicely. You will be kind. You will enjoy them. You will smile. Or a pain worthy of 1,000 volts in a steel hot spike will slide up your ass. And he went, oh, and woke up and smiled. And every time it started to turn into a frown, he went and bought a package of things for hemorrhoids. But to me, everywhere you go is a chance to be able to have fun and enjoy yourself. I know in your life, there are many times you allow yourself to get caught up in nonsense and you get bored. You're filling out forms somewhere. Hey, they tell you at the DMV you can't ask other people questions, but they don't say that you can't blurt out answers. So when I go in and I see a whole bunch of people look worried, I go, number 5, the answer is 100 yards. Number 12, it's 100 feet behind. The answer to number 21 is B, right? And somebody will come by and say, what are you doing? And I say, oh, it's a disease I have. It's like Tourette's system. See, I have a note here from my therapist. And they'll look down and it goes, it says the rapist. And I said, oops, I went to the wrong place. Now, I know that while you sit here, your unconscious is close enough to hear me and has been listening for 3 days. See, for 3 days, it kind of zipped by pretty quickly if you think about it. But when you think back to the beginning, when you walked in here, you all had expectations. Now, I know disappointment requires adequate planning, but so does being pleasantly surprised. If you think about the things that you've actually done, we haven't done a lot, but the few things that you've done successfully and miraculously. You were able to do things that you probably didn't even know were things that could be done. And it won't stop here. Everything that you do every day can be affected by what went on. When you go home, some of you did not bring your spouse here with you, they're going to say things like, what did you do while you were there? I want you to say, nothing as important as being here with you. Because you don't have to teach people what it is you know. I want you to use it to make them feel special. Because if you do, your life will become more special. Because if you look at them and smile, throw the right thunderbolt, the one that shivers, well, then you won't have to have long, meaningful conversations. See, those of you that are wondering what they're doing while you're gone, making pictures of them out fucking somebody else, right, are going to go home and you're going to be jealous, right? Because if you make pictures of them fucking somebody else, well, you're going to feel jealous, let's face it. But if, on the other hand, if you make a picture of them being glad to see you and go home and feel glad to see them, then you'll be the one in the picture. It's a lot more fun. See, to me, all those things are activities. You can make yourself jealous. You can make yourself depressed. You can make yourself nervous. You can make yourself feel like you have low self-esteem, even if you don't know what it is. But on the other hand, if you just stop and consider all the good feelings you've never had, because when it comes to answering the question, how much pleasure can you stand, you guys don't even suspect. But you may have an inkling, but your unconscious knows a lot about what's possible. How many switches are not on that control panel? How many things have you not considered? Well, while you sleep and dream tonight, tomorrow night, the next night, every night I want your unconscious to take responsibility for going through and taking a look at how much joy you missed out on and making plans so that you set your alarm to wake up in a wonderful state. And every day it's going to get better, and every day you look in the mirror, you're going to check to see how much pinker and how much more flushed and how much younger you look. And I know a few of you in here are going to start engaging in a bit of spontaneous remission. I can see it, that some of you are not as healthy as you could be, but your unconscious is not going to stand for this. I want you to get healthier and healthier, and the way to do that is to be happier and happier. I want you to have uncontrolled fits of pleasure, and there's no way out of it. Because you've been close enough to hear me, your unconscious has been close enough to hear me, and when it comes to suffering, I think you've already used yours up. So, say inside your mind the mantra, fuck it, I might as well. Enough is enough, it's my turn. And begin to commit pleasure side. Because the more you realize that even though things might seem impossible at a certain moment in time, it's just an illusion. And illusions aren't built on inaccurate perceptions, but incomplete perceptions. When you watch the magician, you always start looking too late. He's already done the trick when it starts. And it's not that you don't see what you see, it's that he's really lifting up two cards, not one. So when he puts it down and it turns into another card, it's just that you didn't see everything that was there. So when you don't feel, when the illusion says that you can't, when the illusion says you're less than, when the illusion says you just can't, always say the word yet in your mind. When I know that people say, well, I failed at this, they only failed because they defined it in a certain limit in time. Now I want you to take the relaxation you have so far and double it. Let's go way down. And if you feel yourself float down and you float up, it's okay, just float down a little further and begin to find out just how much your unconscious now can take you and prepare you to take the learnings and the understandings of this place out of it. Because they don't need to leave anything in this room. My guess is there won't be need for learning here for quite a while. Not until the next group that's ready to be able to change themselves and others in the simplest of ways. Just being able to hear inside your mind that fanfare. Practicing, if you can hear a fucking McDonald's commercial, it shouldn't be that hard to begin to hear a set of trumpets that change the way you feel, so that when you walk in the door to do something, you're in state. Don't ever try and get in state when it's too late. Always do it just ahead of the now. The gurus always told you, they said, you must be in the here and the now. Well, I want you to be ahead of the now, just a little bit, so that ahead of the now, you go into the state that will make it so that what you want to do is ready. Always take a moment and go deep down, way down, deep inside yourself so that every fiber of your soul is ready to begin to go the other way. Because this time, when you come out of this trance, I want you to come out more than you've ever been in your whole life. So go a little deeper down and let your unconscious prepare. Because this time, when you come outside, I want you to come way outside. The colors are going to be brighter. Everything is going to be more distinct. You're going to hear more, see more, feel more, and be able to do more. You're going to get into a state of wantonness, vivacious alertness. So first we'll go down even a little more. So we'll go 3, 2, 1, -1, -2, -3, -2, -1, 1, 2, 3, all the way up, 4, alertness, 5, enthusiasm, 6, sparkling, 7, 8, 9, 10, times 2 is 20, times 100 is 2,000, and feel yourself zip, come all the way up, pow, come on out. And remember, you can come more out than you've ever been out whenever you want, and whenever you're stuck, the more alert you are, the more things you can do. Now, speaking of things I have to do, I don't have to do nothing. I put it on my list so I wouldn't remember. Now, I did want to take a moment because I know that during the course of this workshop, there's been a lot of people here that have kind of helped out. And I know I get most of your attention, so I don't really want them to be forgotten. That I know that Reed here and this gentleman, but I lost it already. I even wrote this down. I hardly ever write anything down. And people that I don't even know about, because before I got here, people were doing things. Isn't that weird? Where's Kevin? Oh, okay. Are you sure? Ann, where's Ann? Stand up, Ann. Okay. Mary, where are you? Oh, okay, good. See, I don't even know where this is. Keep up. Stand up. I'm not done. Carol. Right. These are all these people that put this thing together, and they did all the things. They answered your phone calls. They interacted with the hotel. They made sure all this stuff got here. John. Stand up, John. Says John. John was my slave. See, Jews know more about slavery than blacks. These blacks used to come up to me and say, my people have been enslaved for 200 years. And I went, flash in the pan, man. You know, my people have not only been enslaved, we've been kicked out of almost every country on the face of the fucking earth, you know. My family ended up in Upper Scotland, for God's sake. And then we tried to rebel, and they kicked us out of there. Then we ended up in Ireland. We got thrown out. Then we went back to Germany, and things got a little tense there. So my family ended up in New Jersey, right? But by the time it got there, everybody was dead but two people. You know, I mean, it was like only two of them. My grandfather and his wife made it. No, just hold on there. Where's Jonathan? Jonathan, stand up. Stever, you're here. Look at how young he looks. Isn't that ridiculous? You have no idea. He's not 19 years old. Huh? Reed, where's Reed? Right? And Steve. Steve, stand up. These are all the people that have done all the things that have made it so this works. And I wanted to make sure that we took a moment and just gave them a little appreciation. Thank you. Woo-hoo-hoo-hoo! That's enough. We don't want them to get a big head here. Sit down. And I personally also wanted to thank somebody because if it wasn't for somebody here, I wouldn't be here at all, because after I had all this great medical help, I reached the point where last summer, if I didn't die, I might have killed myself, because I'm not used to not being able to control things about pain and infection and things like that. And inadvertently, I didn't realize it, but I ran into somebody who is a doctor who I think does cool stuff. And that's why she's here. And I want you to stand up, because I think if it wasn't for you, if I wasn't dead, I'd be so cranky you people would never forget it. So I certainly wanted to thank you. But I'll tell you, some of the stuff she gave me tasted so fucking bad, I couldn't believe it. So I've been learning, because we got to make this stuff so that I know I have to take it, but God, nothing should taste that bad, right? Not to mention the way, if you take that stuff, then afterwards, my breath, I found out, was it's time I could go out and negotiate with anybody. That garlic stuff you had me put in my mouth, I'd put that stuff in there, and then I'd go down to the homeowners association in my building, and I'd go in and I'd go, I want to talk to you about those rules you've been making. Because these people, they get together once a week and they feel obligated to make a new rule. And they got to the point where they were making rules that were way beyond the scope of the study. And I also found out that it's just stuff that, let's just say it burns a lot if you don't dilute it. And she wrote in that thing to be careful about that. And I was. I didn't dilute it when I put it in the squirt gun. There's nothing like a quick shot of liquid cayenne pepper distilled down just to get somebody's attention. It makes mace look like nothing. Perfect, right? Right in the crotch. Like that. But I put DSMO in with it. Mm-hmm. I'll tell you, those big people that hassle you on the streets, dun, 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 dun. Guy walked up to me and said, you got any spare change? I went, yeah, here. Like that. Dun, 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 dun. Guy walked up to me and said, you got any spare change? I went, yeah, here, like that. You feel different? Everything changed. Boy, you should have seen him. Stripped himself naked and ran down the street. Ask me for change, will you? Either that or I tell him, sit for a spell. But And when they ask you, because they do this everywhere in the world now, they come up, they go, spare change? I go, damn, and I just threw mine out. They'll look at the garbage can, but by that time, you're down the road. My favorite one, though, and I have to admit, the most effective one, because this is a lot of people walk around them. Every time I try to come up with some new way of making their mind melt, I figure it's my obligation. And recently, when they come up to me now, they go, spare change? I go, no thanks, man. I got a whole pocket full of it. They don't say anything. They go, like that. And then you go, that's right, and let that hand float involuntarily to your face while you consider maybe you could get a fucking job, right? At least find a place to live. I don't care if you want to be homeless, but this shit of bothering me everywhere I go has gotten out of hand. And I mean, it'd be one thing if they were nice about it, but now they're like going, spare change, like you owe it to them. And the truth is, you don't. The truth is if you want to help people who are homeless, they're not on those street corners. They're in the church basements, and they're here in this country in abundance. They say there's no poverty here, but I got news for you. There's poverty pretty much anywhere. And there's people that spare change could do a lot of good for. And it is not going to get to them through UNICEF. You know, you got to find somebody who's in those places and send it to them and have them pass it out. When I was in India afterwards, I left. I thought, gee, you know, you can't help everybody. But the guy who drove me around, what I do is I send him all kinds of stuff from all kinds of people in big packages, right? Because he told me when I was leaving there, I had a bunch of stuff I didn't really need. Because I was there for a long time, and I just bought things, you know, like clothes. And I have enough clothes at home, and I said, would you like these? And he said, no, but I know, because he's a lot bigger than I am. And said, if he had them, he wore shirts, they would have come like this on him. And he said, no, but I know people who can use it. And I said, great. And he passed it out, and then I thought, why should I stop doing this? Every time I go down to the laundry in my building, there's clothes in there. And I thought, gee, I could do something really useful. So now I take them out and I send them. And when I walk up and down the halls in my building, there's always these big blue packages of clothes everywhere. And I thought, what a waste. So I send those two now. Why, is there something wrong with that? There's nothing wrong with that. Nobody ever complains. Of course, I'm never there. But if they do complain, you know, because they send me little notes, because I guess they don't want to talk to me. I know what it is. Every time they try to, my dog bites them. That must be it. My little tiny dog, and they're terrified. It's only this big. However, have you ever seen the movie The Exorcist? My dog changes just like that. And it thinks it can fly. It does. It puts its ears out like this, runs. The ears go out like this. It flies through the air, whack, right on the genitals. I trained it to do that. I thought, I'm going to teach this dog to do something I want. So I taught it to do that when I uttered the following sentence. So you have a complaint about me? And the dog goes, like that. And and doesn't stop, by the way, keeps doing it. And chases them off down the hall and then come on back and we laugh, high-five each other. Right? And the dog will say, I'm hungry, let's go get some Christians. What do you say? See, now that they don't come to me, I feel obligated to stand outside the Jehovah's Witness Hall. Like that, you know. And I stand there and I have a big pentagram on a stick. Right? And I stand outside and I wait till they come out and I throw water on them out of a bottle. And they go, what are you doing? And I said, nothing. By the way, can I have some of your hair and a few toenails? And they go, you're involved in devil worship. And I said, no, but he likes me a lot. See, to me, they're not going back far enough. To me, this planet has been here for a long time, and it was, as far as I can tell, most of these newer religions are really nonsense. You can't even see the deities. What good is that? To me, if I talk to somebody, I want to see them. That's why I don't like the telephone. When they get this video phone thing up, I'll be happy to talk to people, but I'm not willing to just listen to a voice come through a thing. And I'm certainly not willing to get all of my communication by rumor. Some guy in a dress telling me, well, I'll tell you what he said. Not me. Here's a bowl. Put some money in it. You pass a bowl with money by me, it is not going to get fuller. This, I guarantee you. To me, I like to dump it all out like this, and I go like that. I go, hey, look at this bowl's full of money. Hey, can I have that one too? I know some poor people that could use this. When I was in Rome and saw what they had at the Vatican, what are they doing with Solomon's ring? Excuse me, I believe that's called looting. They have stuff they stole from all over the world. It's the most opulent place I have ever seen. What happened to that vow of poverty and chastity? I don't think so. I think what we have is a vow of hypocrisy. They want to help people. They should stop taking money from poor people and start giving it to them. Take money from rich people and give it to poor people. Make more money. Do something useful. To me, when they start telling people to live in poverty and to accept poverty and that things will be better in the next life, my thing is for whom specifically? Because I have a feeling if you pick on poor people, when it comes around, it ain't going to get better. Now, with this in mind, I want you to keep in mind when you leave here, the learnings you've made will go with you. I feel that you are obligated, and I do mean obligated, to make sure you use them to put a smile on people's faces. That, you know, I always hear that people, NLP is manipulative, you bet. But the way I want you to manipulate people is to realize the following. At one time, there was no money, none. Look how much there is. So it must be possible to make more. You don't have to take from other people. What we need to do is to create more opportunity, to create more jobs, to begin to realize we don't need to spend more money on education. We need to put more learning in the schools. And the teachers can't do it because they just fucking don't know how. So you have to do what I did. Go down and show them. Teach them. And if they're not willing to learn, get rid of them. To me, that especially with your own children, prepare them for the fact that the world is filled with assholes that don't know what they're talking about. Build them, and the very first thing you should build when you leave here is a bullshit detector. And the longer DHE, if you guys go to John's, I'm sure he'll put one in. If you go to Barb's, I'm sure she'll put one in, because I find that it's really important to know that when somebody is telling you something and they're not showing you anything. To me, I've tried to show you just enough that you would know that you could do this. I didn't want to show you things that you went, I could never do that. I want to show you everything I do. I was the most inept of all of you. It's not that I don't make mistakes. It's that I make more faster. And when I make them, I like to notice, because I only like to do things that work and work well. And I recommend the same to you. So with that, once more, I think we should thank Barb that she's going to sleep tonight. I'll tell you that. And go to a workshop. Yeah, you women, you wandered off. Yeah, I know how it is. I know, talking about shopping, yeah. That's great. That's what I need somebody to do, talk to my wife about shopping. Mm-hmm. All right, Barb, I want you to keep in mind I have a banana and I know how to use it. You know, when I talk about that, inevitably somebody always comes up and gives me a banana and says, I know you're not armed, here you go. That, to me, and I also wanted to thank my wife because she puts up with this shit all the time. Thank you, dear. But as you might well imagine, it's time for me to go. I have to go and take my wife out to dinner. And I recommend if you have a wife or a husband that you go and do the same thing. That it's time for you to go home. So I wanted to say thank you and good night. Yeah, also, that's it. You may leave now.